Good morning. My name is Dr. Seth Waldman. I am the director of the Pain Management Center at the Hospital for Special Surgery in Manhattan, and I have the pleasure today to discuss an evidence-based response to the prescription opioid epidemic in orthopedic surgery. Joining me this morning are Peter Grimaldi, senior director of our Physician's Assistant Department, and social worker and addiction specialist Justin D'Onofrio. Confronting the difficulties in managing a population of patients who are on prescription opioid medicines and having surgery has become a significant challenge in the United States over the past 10 to 20 years. This is particularly acute in the setting of orthopedic surgery, and perhaps it is not surprising that orthopedic surgeons are the third highest prescribers of opioids among physicians in the United States, accounting for about 7.5% of all prescriptions for opioids nationwide. The specific challenges include, first, caring for opioid-naive patients who are undergoing elective surgery in such a way as to minimize their exposure to opioids and prevent long-term dependence. Second, how best to evaluate and manage patients who are on high-dose prescribed opioids who need to have an elective orthopedic surgery. And third, how to plan the care of patients who use opioids and other medicines in an aberrant or illegal pattern, in other words, people who have substance abuse disorders. Several years ago, our hospital developed a controlled substances task force for the purposes of evaluating these three aspects of patient care. This included members of the anesthesia department, orthopedic surgery department, medicine, social work, physician's assistants, nursing, risk management, administration, and pharmacy. The work of this committee is summarized in an article authored by Dr. Ellen Soffin to be published in Anesthesia and Analgesia in November 2017. Our first step was to understand the current state of prescribing in our hospital, but quickly necessitated an educational campaign, both for patients and clinicians, the development of cultural changes to alter prescribing habits, and all while continuing to provide the highest level of care for patients undergoing surgery, specifically with respect to opioid pain medications. Because of the nature of opioid medicines, changing our practice has both clinical and regulatory aspects. Multiple professional organizations have recommended that while opioids are certainly efficacious in the treatment of acute postoperative pain, they should be used at the lowest effective dose only when necessary and for as short a duration as possible. Multiple studies, however, show that patients are often prescribed up to 3 times more opioids than are consumed after orthopedic surgery, and very few have any counseling regarding the safe disposal of unused narcotic medicines. It is hard to know the impact which this has had on the amount of medication available for overuse and diversion, but it is likely to be very significant. There is limited data to suggest that minimizing the variability in opioid prescribing after orthopedic surgery reduces use. However, given the concern regarding the risk of diversion of unused medication, we felt it would be prudent to start there. Peter, can you tell us what the state was at HSS when we began this effort?
Sure, thanks. When we set about establishing some kind of guidelines as it related to opioid prescribing, we knew that we didn't have any clear direction as to what should be prescribed and when. So our goals were acknowledging, one, that we had to be conservative in the way we prescribed opioids. Two, acknowledge that there's an interdependence between good pain control and return to function, which is so critical in orthopedic surgery. With that, we felt it prudent to engage, of course, our surgeon experts to kind of identify a process by which we would establish some kind of prescribing guidelines, specifically in the opioid-naive patient. As we know, these patients, we don't necessarily have a sense of what their needs are going to be prior to surgery. So we set about looking at the various procedures we did, and we stratified them by complexity. And with that, what the expected medical need for pain control was going to be. So we established certain levels and certain guiding principles as it relates to opioid prescribing, and we did that at our service level within our institution.
Was there some difficulty with that? Did you find that the surgeons were resistant to cooperating on the doses, for example, for a certain surgery or the directions or the medicines?
No. Actually, consensus building anywhere is always a challenge. I think our approach was to, number one, engage the surgeons very early on in the process, engage the leaders of the surgeons to help them understand and support the process. And because we involve them at our service level, where we have service chiefs and various leaders at the service level, And let them be the decision makers. We were very successful in kind of facilitating the process and arriving at these guidelines. So it was very successful.
Our next challenge was to develop educational programs which provided clinicians, including orthopedic surgeons and preoperative internists, with tools to determine which patients would benefit from a preoperative pain screening. Patients who were receiving high-dose opioid pain medications and those who have a history of substance abuse disorders would then be triaged prior to scheduling surgery to see a physician and a nurse practitioner in the pre-op screening clinic who would discuss their care, speak with their prescriber, query the state prescription databases, and perform toxicology screening. When indicated, they would also be referred to see Justin D'Onofrio, our addiction specialist, for counseling, and if necessary, for a referral beyond that. Justin, can you tell us a little bit about what those evaluations are like?
Sure. So SAMHSA began a program, I think, in the late 1980s called ESPERT, and it's a three-step process for how we screen and evaluate patients that could potentially have substance use disorder. So it starts at the physician level. They'll do a screening using one of the evidence-based tools that are available. And once they're referred to me, then I would perform what's called a brief intervention. And with that, we're looking for the patient to gain some insight into the problem if they don't already have it. A lot of the patients that I do see come to me with substance use disorder already, or they've had treatment in the past, so they're very familiar with the process of what happens once referred to treatment. The assessment takes about 20 minutes, depending on the patient, depending on what we're talking about. I provide basic counseling and try to use some of the skills in motivational interviewing that I learned when I was working in the substance abuse clinics while I was in social work school. And then from there, if I feel like they need to go to additional treatment, then I will refer them to a local, either a clinic, or we'll find an addiction specialist that they can go to.
From your perspective, do you find that this is something that you've had success with, or do you find that the patients or the referring doctors are resistant to you?
Yeah, there's going to be resistance at every level when it comes to substance abuse. And unfortunately, it's just part of this process. A lot of people are not aware of where they are in this process of change, so they don't have insight into their issues yet. So, of course, resistance is natural.
So the idea when we began the coordination of these services was to try to recognize when possible in advance circumstances where the use of pain medications represents an inordinate risk, such as with an uncontrolled substance use disorder, but also in circumstances where there may simply be risk to the downstream provider, not the surgeon, but the person perhaps in their office or on their team who's going to be writing the prescriptions. And Peter, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about how the physician's assistants in our hospital have responded to that challenge.
Sure. They, physician assistants, as an extension of our surgeons, are managing their patients in the perioperative setting, quite commonly in the postoperative setting, and are often responsible for writing for the discharge prescription. So in this current environment, when there's a lot of, attention around opioid and the opioid crisis, it was very important that we ensured that our PAs, our NPs, our physicians themselves were well supported by the organization in terms of, how should we go about addressing this issue and use conservative prescribing practices. So, because we did a great job of engaging all disciplines that are involved with prescribing, it helped control the anxiety that was invariably going to be created as a result of this issue.
And it's going smoothly now?
It is. I can tell you that some of the initial data that came out of our, since we instituted our guidelines, we saw about a 30% decrease in the amount of opioids we were prescribing at discharge and very close adherence to our guidelines, which was a great success. And we saw that very early on in the process. And, we're not going to stop there. Certainly, what we're looking to learn is, okay, what's the downstream impact of that? In other words, are we just shifting the need for writing for additional opioids further downstream to the surgeon or physician's office? Or perhaps some of the studies that we have going on concurrently with these guidelines is maybe we can start reducing our numbers even further and use evidence-based research to get there.
I wonder if I could follow up with you, Justin, sure. about what happens after. So you've seen a patient for counseling mm-hmm. and make a referral.
Yeah.
How often is it that they have any difficulty in today's environment in getting care when they have an addiction problem or a substance abuse disorder?
Well, it's difficult to access certain aspects of it. So if we're going to look at a harm reduction approach, something like Suboxone can be difficult to access for patients that don't that have limited resources. And that in those cases, you would refer them to like a methadone clinic, for instance. So it's harder to find addiction specialists that will work with patients with their insurance or, you know, depending on what kind of financial resources they have in order to pay for the treatment. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it okay. does. Thanks. Do either of you have any final thoughts to add? Peter, anything you'd like to add?
Thank you. I think our approach in the current environment where there are a lot of legislative changes afoot at the state level, beyond our state and at the federal level, along with changing practices, whether it be pharmacies or other providers, it's important that we are focused on our patients and what we determine to be what's in the best interest of our patients, again, balancing the delicate art of good pain control with ensuring they can return to function. I think our approach is patient-centric, and the reason I think that is because where our approach is based on what we expect their medical needs are going to be. And that's critical. Rather than just reacting to the emotion associated with this issue, we're doing what we believe is truly in the medical best interest of the patient.
Mm-hmm. And I would have to agree with you, Peter. I think that a multidisciplinary approach is probably the best approach when treating substance abuse. So I think that layering in social workers along with the NPs and the doctors, I think, is going to get the best results for our patients.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
I am Dr. Seth Waldman of the Hospital for Special Surgery. Thank you very much.